Welcome to Spoiler Piece Theater, the podcast that doesn't give a shit about spoilers. We just want to talk about the movies. My name is Megan Kearns. I write film reviews for Edge Media Network. My pronouns are she, her, and I'm a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association.
My name is Dave Riedel. I write about movies. My pronouns are he, him, and I'm a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association also.
And my name is Evan Crean. My pronouns are he, him, co-chair of the Boston Online Film Critics Association and co-author of your 80s movie guide to better living.
Indeed you are.
Yes, you are.
This is true.
I cannot tell you how excited I am, gentlemen, because we've got the gang back together. Woohoo!
Getting the band back together. That's
yeah,
right.
We do.
Yeah. I know this is the first time in four weeks and a month. I don't know. The past three episodes, we have not all been together. So it's been wild. So I'm very excited. Yeah. We're all here. Woohoo! Mm-hmm. And we're here to talk about some movies, as always. I have missed you guys. I missed you guys so much, but the episodes were great.
Missed you too.
Thank you. I know. Thank you. It was weird. It's weird being on vacation. It's weird being at the beach. And I'm like, I wonder what those two are up to. What are Dave and Evan up to? What are they talking about?
What movies are they watching?
Yeah. I know. I was wondering, what movies are you guys watching?
I don't know how far into the last episode you got, but it's like, wherever Megan is, I'm not going to say it on the show. Because it was such a strange thing to say. It's like, how can you not know where your co-host is, dummy? You know,
so I know, right?
I wanted to correct that instantly.
But I loved it because I appreciate you respecting my privacy. Mm. Even though I did post on Instagram where I was. But still, I appreciate it. I appreciate it nonetheless. But yes, I was in sunny Florida having a ball on the beach. It was great. Loved it.
Cool.
So, but I'm very happy to be back and talking about movies, which is what we're going to be talking about on this episode. Of course, we have three movies to talk about. We are going to be talking about Emergency, Firestarter, and Hold Your Fire. These are all different movies, and yet they all somehow have same thematic titles. Mm. But before we get into that, we want to point you over to our Patreon. This week, as we do every week, we do bonus episodes for our patrons. For $5 a month, you get access to them. And this week, we talk about the 1990 classic rom-com, Pretty Woman. And we have such a great conversation about it. So if you're a patron, go check it out. And if you're not a patron, consider joining so you get to listen to it.
Yeah, it was a lively conversation. I'm just going to throw that in.
More lively than this response. Yeah.
I still have a touch of the 19, everybody. So, you know, hey, 19. That's what they should have called it. Hey, 19.
Hey, 19.
Wow. Hey, we just sang on the show. How long has it been?
Yes.
Actually, Evan, you might have sung like last week or 2 weeks ago. I don't remember, but.
Yeah, I think so.
Right. So we're going to kick things off with Firestarter because Evan and I were the two who saw it. And this is a remake of the 1984 film. It's also adapted from the Stephen King novel, the 1980 novel. And it's directed by Keith Thomas, who also did The Vigil, written by Scott Teams. Stars Ryan Kiera Armstrong as the protagonist, Charlie, who is a pyrokinetic girl because her parents have, one is telepathic, one is telekinetic, due to college experiments being injected with an experimental drug by a government organization. And it also stars Zac Efron, Sidney Lemon, and Michael Gray Eyes.
Hold on. I just want to ask
Dave.
The team. That description, could there be any more Stephen King description of an early 80s Stephen King story than that?
No.
That's amazing.
No, never. None at all. It's screaming 80s King.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. So, Evan, what did you think of this?
Overall, I really liked this movie.
What?
It's, yeah.
I'm sorry.
It's not perfect.
I'm so sorry.
I have some criticisms. I respect that they tried to tell the story in 90 minutes. Like, I respect that they were like, let's try and tell this story in 90 minutes. Because it feels like there is a lot that they left out. And that's like, that the flip side of that is that, like, okay, it for me, it moved, but it also felt like they could have done more with the story. It felt like there were just things that were missing in their attempt to be brief.
This actually, Keith Thomas has talked about how this is probably the first of a trilogy. So, or it might continue. So,
gotcha.
Probably a reason why you're sensing that.
All right. Well, it did feel a little rough around the edges in that way. I thought the lead performance was terrible.
Oh my God. It's atrocious. It's abysmal.
The performances in this, I think, are wildly inconsistent in terms of quality. Yes. Like Zac Efron, Michael Gray Eyes. Can we just put him in everything?
Yes.
I love him.
He is wonderful. And I agree with you. He's just such a delight. He's such a great actor. Love him.
Yeah. I loved him on Fear the Walking Dead. And I'm like, please bring his character back. I want him back on the show because he's so freaking good.
If you want to see him on a show, he's great on Rutherford Falls, which is coming back for season 2.
Oh, sweet. I'll definitely need to check that out. I lost my train of thought on Michael Gray.
The acting is wildly uneven.
Yeah, wildly uneven. The woman who plays like the head of whatever this, you know, secret organization is, I thought her performance, I thought was terrible.
Oh, that's Gloria Rubin. I know, it's sad because she was good on ER.
And then Kurtwood Smith, I was like, I like him, but why are we only seeing him in one scene? This is such a bizarre choice to only have him in one scene.
And he was good in that scene, actually.
Yeah, I thought so. And I did like the score. The John Carpenter score?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Although there's two other people who also worked on it, too. His son and someone else who now the name is eluding me. But yes, it's a great score. Really is.
So I feel like there were some things that I did enjoy about this and some things I didn't enjoy. It felt like kind of a mixed bag. Like overall to me, I think I liked it, but there's definitely some flaws. But I'm going to guess that you did not like this at all based on your initial reaction to me saying I like this.
Evan, I'm so sorry. I feel so rude and horrible. I just was so shocked. I am a very excitable person, in case y'all haven't noticed, and sometimes my reactions get the best of me. And yeah, no, I despised this. I thought this was a hot flaming pile of garbage. I thought this was an absolute dumpster fire. I was bored to tears. I thought this was such a difficult film to get through. I thought Ryan Kiera Armstrong's performance was, as I said, abysmal and atrocious. It's one of the worst child performances I've ever seen. It's so bad. Zac Efron I do like, and he's fine in it. Sydney Lemon, who plays the mom, she's fine in it. Kurtwood Smith is really good in that one scene. And yeah, Michael Gray Eyes is really good too. I think he imbues the character Rainbird, which is interesting because in the 1984 original film, it's played by George C. Scott. And it's like, why are you fucking casting a white person to play an indigenous person? It's disgusting. So thankfully they cast an actual indigenous person to play a Native American in this film. But Michael Gray Eyes does a really good job imbuing the character with a real complexity regarding that he's a tortured soul and he's also been experimented on, which is a change from the book, I believe the book, but also definitely the 1984 film. But yeah, but it's an interesting, his depiction is interesting. But yeah, the dialogue is abysmal. It's so bad.
Oh, it's terrible.
The fact that Charlie, she's 11 years old, the protagonist says, liar, liar, pants on fire before emitting a fireball is just so ghastly and atrocious. Like, who the fuck wrote this? A 5-year-old? Like, oh my God. It's just, it's so, so, so
bad. I know
bad.
I didn't see this, but that's inexcusable.
Right? Like, it's terrible. And there are multiple examples of that. There's just so much egregiously bad dialogue. And it's just, I don't know what's happening. And I think the cinematography is incredibly murky. The lighting palette is off all. I think you said murky, actually, and I think that's why it stuck out to me. The lighting palette is so, and the color palette is so blah until they get to the end when it's like the final climactic showdown in the shop. And then it's like purples and golds and reds to clearly evoke fire, like shades of fire. Mm-hmm. But I just didn't care at that point because I'm like, I'm so fucking bored by this time. And the characters are not characters. There is no character development. There are no personalities except possibly Michael Gray Eyes' character. But even that's a stretch. Like, I think this movie is awful. And I was really pissed off because Keith Thomas, we love The Vigil. The Vigil was so good. Such a unique, Jewish horror film. So good. It was moving. It was compelling. It was great. Really creepy. So I had high expectations for this film. And the premise, I mean, I didn't like the 1984 film with Drew Barrymore. It's trash too. But I had high hopes because I was like, okay, here's a good filmmaker. And this is such a great premise. Like the fact that it's a girl with really powerful powers. That's ridiculous, but powerful powers in pyrokinesis and telekinesis. And she is embracing her rage. She is using her powers to, you know, ultimately right wrongs against this awful organization who want to pursue her and kidnap her and weaponize her body. And I wrote this on Twitter, like this has such, and in my review, actually, this has such implications or could be such an allegory for what's going on right now with abortion bans across the country and racism and transphobic laws across the country. Like it has so much resonance, and yet it squanders its really incredible premise, and it does nothing with any of those things. And so the only good thing is the John Carpenter score and casting Michael Gray Eyes. It's just, it's so unfortunate. So I absolutely despised this. But I'm glad you enjoyed it. And I mean that. I'm dead serious. I am glad.
No, I know.
Yeah, because I wish I could have enjoyed it because I didn't.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the cinematography. I don't think I mentioned it before, but I remember tweeting about it and using the word murky. So maybe that's.
Yes, that's what I saw. What, yes.
But yeah, it looks like garbage. It's so it really hard does. To see anything. Yep. It's just so drab.
And the effects look so cheap.
Yeah.
They look so cheesy and cheap. It's ridiculous. It's not good. It's not good.
Wow. I'm sorry I missed it.
I've never seen the Drew Barrymore version. Now I feel like I need to see it at least.
You don't.
Oh, it's an experience. The one I would not recommend.
But
it's pretty bad.
I agree with you that there was, you know, opportunities. There were opportunities here to offer social commentary that feels relevant to what's going on right now. And there's none of that's here.
No.
I mean, and like, you know, plenty of other stories have, I feel like, drawn inspiration from this too. Like most noticeably, you know, Stranger Things, like the main character is basically this character.
Yeah,
but
100%.
It's such a bummer that they don't do anything interesting. And then also I was just looking back at my notes and I'm just like, we got violence against animals too. Like we don't
oh
need
my
that.
God,
we don't
the
need
cat.
To see that.
The cat, the poor cat is set on fire. Why?
Right.
I wrote about that in my review, too. I'm like, why? This adds absolutely nothing. It's just graphic for the sake of being graphic. It's just gross. Mm-hmm.
It is gross.
It's disgusting and it pissed me off. It also it's kind of reminiscent to the scene or that one of the images in the first sequence where he's having a nightmare about potentially a flashback where where her head's on fire as a baby. And still, I'm like, this is just gross, but not like, and I usually don't care about gross. Like I usually invite gross, like gross. And like, I wanted to kind of like that because I'm like, oh, you're setting a baby's head on fire. That's kind of cool. But at the same time, I'm like, but it's not adding anything. It's just like almost the equivalent of a jump scare, but it's just not good. It's not doing anything.
Right. Yeah. It's just like the shocking opening scene.
Yes.
It's like, oh my God, the baby's on fire and a crib's on fire. And just, you know, oh wait, it was a dream maybe, or a flashback. I don't know.
Who knows? Who cares?
Yeah.
Do we care? Do we know? No, I don't know. Well, you might have cared. I did not. Yeah. But it is interesting because clearly there's a connection. You know, obviously Stephen King found teen girls and preteen girls very fascinating with powers. You know, of course, Carrie, and that was brought on by her period. And this is not brought on by her period. Mm-hmm. But they do talk about her period in this, which I think is interesting because in one of the first scenes, Charlie talks about how her body feels weird. And her dad's like, oh, is it that? And she's like, no.
No, it's not that. She's like, it just feels weird.
It's just because I can set things on fire. Haven't you noticed?
Right, you know. It's the bad thing, quote unquote, that they keep referring to, which is ridiculous.
Yeah. And then there's, you know, that idea that like the more he uses his powers, like he's bleeding from the eyeballs and having micro hemorrhages from like using his powers. And when she does it, she's like, it tingles or it burns or something, but it feels good.
Yes.
This movie really does sound like a dumpster fire.
Oh, it was.
I wouldn't go that far, but this definitely has its flaws.
Yeah. Like I said, I'm just frustrated because I think it could have been really, really great and mm-hmm. should have been really great. And yeah,
it definitely had potential that it did not capitalize on, whether yes. you're in my boat or your boat.
Right. Either boat did not capitalize on its potential, which is frustrating. Evan, did you have any other observations or thoughts that you wanted to share?
No.
Oh my God. Yeah. This movie just made me so mad. All right. Well, let's move on to our next film then, which is the documentary Hold Your Fire. It is written, directed, shot, edited, and produced by Stefan Forbes. And this premiered at TIFF in 2021. And does anyone want to give the summary? If not, I can certainly do it, of course.
I don't have it in front of me. Sorry.
I actually don't either. No. That's why I'm asking.
Oh, no, it's fine. I'll do it. It's...
I was unprepared. I apologize.
No worries. So here's the IMDb, as we all love. Brooklyn, 1972. And I'm probably going to pronounce his name incorrectly. Shuaib Rahim tried to steal guns for self-defense, starting the longest hostage siege in NYPD history. NYPD psychologist Harvey Schlossberg fought to reform police use of violence and save lives by using words, not guns. So, yeah. There's a robbery. No problem. There's a robbery. These guys go to a sporting goods store to steal guns for self-defense. Long story short on that is that they are Muslim, and in their neighborhood, they are being bullied and oppressed by the Nation of Islam. So for those that don't know, these are separate groups, religious groups. And so they're trying to get guns so they can just kind of defend themselves. And then while they're there, the alarm is tripped. The cops show up. The cops start shooting, they start shooting back, and now all of a sudden we're stuck in a hostage situation that goes on for, 40-something hours? It goes on more than a full day. And, there's a cop that's killed in the shootout, and, there's people in the NYPD that, just want to go in there, business as usual, let's just take them all out. Any innocent people in there be damned. And then, there's people like Dr. Schlossberg who were like, why don't we do this more tactfully? And why don't we actually try and talk to these people and negotiate with them and make sure that we're not just massacring everybody in there and people are coming out alive? So, yeah, that's, I think, a more complete picture.
Yes, I think that is.
Yeah.
So, Dave, since we haven't heard too much from you yet, what did you think of this film?
I thought this is really well done. I thought that the I can't remember the two men who committed the robbery who are featured so prominently in the documentary. I can't remember their names. I thought that they were very compelling on camera, and I think this movie's strength is that it shows the so-called criminals, if you want to call them that, shows a really nuanced, gives a nuanced portrayal of them. Mm-hmm. And the cops, except for Harvey? I know his last name is Schlossberg. Was his first name Harvey? I don't remember.
Yes.
Harvey. Mm-hmm. The one who wanted to, revolutionize and did try to revolutionize hostage negotiation. I think it's interesting that so many of the cops just come across as bastards, which, made my feelings about police known on this show. Oh, I'll never forget the time I got pulled over doing 55 and a 55 because I had New York plates in Massachusetts. Anyway, that's another story for another time. I had a really hard time, and this is my fault. This is my problem, whatever. I had a really hard time listening to any of those police and not wanting to, well, I'm sure you can imagine what I'm thinking. So,
yes,
I don't want to hear, I don't want any law enforcement people to hear this show and come after me. So, I mean, at the end when the guy, I can't remember whoever's talking to him off camera, one of the producers, the director or something like that says, should these men be forgiven for holding up the store? and for the death of that police officer, by the way, who no one knows how that guy died. Never found the bullet fragments, nothing. Have no idea what projectile killed him. It's
with the possibility of friendly fire included. Yeah.
Right. I was going to say that could have been from another cop.
Oh, right. And the filmmakers, I think, make that clear.
They do. Yeah.
But, you know, it's the last 5 or 10 minutes of the documentary, and they ask the guy, I can't remember which one it is. I think he's the one who became like a captain. It's like, you know, do you forgive whomever? He's like, well, I think God should forgive. I'm paraphrasing. I think God should forgive him, but I don't forgive him. It's like, oh, just fuck off.
Yeah.
Just fuck right the fuck off.
I thought the same thing. Mm-hmm.
You fucking blue wall. Anyway, so that's, I can't say anything else. So it's a good documentary. Glad I saw it. But it just made me so furious in some parts, which I think might be the point, but you know.
Yeah.
I think it is.
I definitely think that's the point. Although I would disagree in saying this is a good documentary. I think the subject of the documentary is fascinating. This idea that this incident, you know, helped spawn hostage negotiation both within the NYPD and as part of like a national thing that police started doing instead of just going in and killing people in these situations. But I just don't think they do a very good job telling the story. This movie is very unfocused. It feels so long. It's an hour and a half. I remember pausing at some point a half hour in, and I couldn't believe there was an hour left. It's just so disjointed in the way it tells its story. And, you know, to what your point, Dave, we just have to sit there and listen to these cops espouse their fucking white supremacist, you know, horse shit ideas. And
you said
it's interesting to see that juxtapose. I mean, there's literally a scene in the documentary where you see cops gearing up to go, I think, into Attica and kill the prisoners, chanting white power before they go in there.
You
to
are
kill
correct.
Them.
Yep.
And so it's an interesting juxtaposition to have them saying these like horrible things and often misrepresenting the situation and have the counterpoint of the people who are actually there, holding these people hostage and being able to refute things that they were saying. But it just feels like way too much energy of this documentary is just letting them talk and say frustrating things instead of focusing on the hostage negotiation itself. Like, what were people saying? What was the breakdown of, like, this could have been a riveting documentary. And if we're going to talk about this being a revolutionary thing, show us what happened. Talk about what conversations happened behind the scenes that eventually got them to surrender or got them to release hostages, or, you know, give me more of that, because, you know, clearly Dr. Schlossberg had this, you know, incredible impact. So why not get more into his philosophies and these ideas that he, you know, the end of the film says he went and trained the FBI and trained hundreds of thousands of cops. They also note that they didn't really use a lot of his stuff, and that's why they're still terrible.
Yeah. Well, why would they want to? They're right and everybody else is wrong. So
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Megan?
Evan, I am so glad you said that, because I did not like this documentary at all for the exact same reasons. I agree that it is a very fascinating topic, and to look at the inception of hostage negotiation and the mental health of police is briefly discussed. And it's funny you talk about the juxtaposition. I literally had that in my notes, the juxtaposition through the editing of the statements by the Black Muslim hostage takers talking about how they knew that the cops didn't care about the situation because they were clearly confusing and didn't know the differences between different Muslim groups. And yet that is completely the very next scene. We see an incredibly racist white cop who says, and I quote, "I think we overdefine racism as something bad, when in reality, we just want to be with our own kind. Yeah, you had the slavery, but think of how great America is. Why don't you go fuck yourself with that racist white supremacist bullshit, you fucking asshole?" That is so disgusting.
That really is.
And it just was I was incensed. And again, I think, Dave, to your point, you are supposed to be incensed.
Yeah.
However, the problem is that not everyone is going to be incensed watching that. I think
right.
Black people are going to be incensed. Brown people are going to be incensed, possibly. And I don't want to assume everyone's a monolith. But I think many people of color who have faced police brutality and racism and discrimination certainly will be pissed. I think there are certainly white people, because we are all white and we are all outraged by this and disgusted. And mm-hmm. other progressive people will be outraged. But there are far too many white people who are complicit and comfortable with white supremacy who will not get that point and who are just be like, oh, yeah, that's what the cops are doing. That's just what they're saying. Yeah, that's just
right.
fine and normal. And that ultimately is my massive problem with this film, is that it just didn't work for me personally because it wasn't enough of a staunch condemnation of white supremacy, of racism, of
right.
the critical failures of the systemic oppression and the supposed criminal justice system. And those elements are there. They're mentioned, they're kind of hinted at, they're intimated, but it never really makes that strong enough of a point. And that really, really is my problem. And like I said, it is there because there's a woman who says holding your fire is what negotiation is about. And then there's another gentleman who talks about we're a violent country and we're built on violence, and talking mm-hmm. about guns and how guns are so ingrained in our media. And that's so true. And I would have liked a broader explanation, or not explanation, but a broader contextualization of that. So yes, very much like you, Evan, I think this is an absolutely fascinating topic. I think it's a topic that should be looked at. I think this could have been a really fascinating piece in a larger picture, looking mm-hmm. Where other documentaries and other narrative films look at the problems of police brutality and look at the problems of white supremacy and and institutional racism and systemic racism. But the problem is this film, for me, just didn't do it enough to bring it all together. And
yeah.
I also found it just very, unfortunately, very tedious, even though there are moments that are really fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it gives just way too much of a platform. Like the guy that you're mentioning when he was talking about we're a violent country, like we're talking about a guy who has like a sticker that's visible in his room that says not a liberal. You know, it's like, you know that yeah. there's like, it's just, there's so many clips where the police just say the most insufferable, awful things.
Yes.
And like,
yes.
I couldn't believe some of the stuff that they actually said on camera. Like, you guys know you're being
right?
recorded, yeah. right?
Right. I think the most damning was getting back to what you were saying, Dave, about that part where he said, you know, like, I don't, God can forgive him, but I don't forgive mm-hmm. him. And it like, to me, it hones in this problem, like this systemic issue I think we have with policing in our country, where cops, they treat each other like they're part of some special club where their lives are more valuable than other people.
Yes.
And he says something to the effect of like, he killed a cop, so I can't forgive him. And it's like, it's so indicative to me of the larger issue that cops see another cop's life as inherently more valuable just because that person was a cop. And so mm-hmm. therefore we must be angrier. We must be less likely to forgive someone else when, you know, again, like we said, we don't know who killed that cop. We don't even know
no.
if it was friendly fire.
No.
Like,
yeah, no one knows.
Your job is supposed to be to protect and serve. And that's what they, you know, love to say. We're protecting and serving, but you're not protecting and serving anyone
no.
when you think that you and your life is more valuable than the people around you.
I'm so glad you said that, Evan, because it reminds me of the way I was raised. I was raised in a very, very, very conservative home. And that was something that I was taught, was that the worst thing you can do, or one of the worst things, is to kill a cop. And mm-hmm. not kill a person, kill a cop. And that is the kind of rhetoric that is seen, that we must have respect for police. And I'm fine with that if we have equal respect for everyone, but that's not
yeah.
the case. And this documentary, very to its credit, it very clearly shows that there are numerous cops who were involved in this who did not give a shit at all about de-escalating or helping anything. And it's also very clear, and it's unfortunately very relevant to today, because we've had so many mass shootings recently. I mean, we always have mass shootings, which is disgusting and tragic. We've had many recently, And so often, cops are very able to de-escalate when the terrorist is a white person who is armed, but mm-hmm. not when it's an unarmed black person. And then they just shoot. And it's like, what the hell? What, like, you clearly pick and choose. Why can't you always de-escalate? The one thing I will say that one of the cops said that I do think is correct, but I don't think they meant it. I don't think I liked it in the way that they meant it. But they were talking about how, mm-hmm. well, we're not social workers. No, you're not. And that's the problem. And that's so often why people talk about defunding police, because we need social workers. Yeah. We need mental health care professionals to go into most of these situations rather than police forces. And so that guy mm-hmm. was probably saying it in a very different way than what I was thinking, but right. I do agree. At least he acknowledged, you know, there are problems that are not necessarily intended for police. I just wish we had much more robust mental health care and social services going on yeah. to address these issues.
Yeah. That reminds me of this documentary. I don't know if either of you seen it, called Ernie and Joe.
It's
about these cops who, they're part of their own special unit where they Ooh. Just deal with these types of like mental health situations, and they go in there to de-escalate with
the awesome.
Like utmost goal to make sure that no one gets hurt. And like, you see them show up at scenes where, like, you know, someone's like ready to jump off a bridge, and it's like they're there. And it's like, there was another situation where someone was having like a mental health episode breakdown. I don't know, however you want to describe it. And like everyone there, the cops are just like, you know, itchy trigger fingers, and they're just like ready to gun this person down for literally nothing. And they step in and they're like, whoa, guys, let's bring this down. There's nothing actually really happening here. We do not need to shoot somebody. And so I think, you know, if we had more people like that, maybe yes. we could, you know what I mean?
Yes,
like,
yes.
Or cops more broadly trained in their techniques. And I know right. those two guys try to train a lot of other cops in their de-escalation. Nonviolent mm-hmm. de-escalation.
There's
techniques.
Only two of them.
Yeah. We need something. Something's right? got to change. You know, well, it's like either we need to, you know, put more social workers out there, or mm-hmm. people need to actually get the training they need to de-escalate without just going straight to their gun.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the thing. Like I've had this conversation with people who are very pro police because they have family members who are in police force, or, you know, or just they just support the police. And I get it. I get why, of course. But at the same time, it's not just that we're talking, it's not just about individual bad cops, which I think is the problem. It's a systemic wide issue, and we need to reckon with it, just like we need to reckon with our racist country. This is a white supremacist nation, and we need to reckon that. And so I think nothing is going to change until we reckon with all of our systemic issues. And anyway,
nothing's going to change until this country stops having minority rule, which is a whole different
conversation. Oh my God. Yes, preach.
I'm going to tell you my two cop stories real quick. One is just an observation about all of the videos that are released when you see a cop murder someone. I'm always struck by just how much the word fuck comes out of every cop's mouth when they're telling someone to drop their gun or put their hands on the wheel or whatever. And as you guys know, I'm a big adherent of the use of the word fuck. Love it. But I really don't think you're de-escalating a situation when you say, put your fucking hands up, put your fucking hands up, drop the fucking gun. I don't think that helps anybody. Just throwing that out there.
No.
Second thing, I once got a ticket on Newberry Street. This is amazing. I was waiting to parallel park. And as I was pulling in, I still had, right when I moved here from New York, had New York plates, backing into a space. Woo! Cop comes over. He's like, license and registration, please. And I have no idea why I'm being asked for anything. And I said, okay. I said, well, my registration's in my glove box. May I open my glove? Because I'm not stupid. May I open my glove box and get it? He says, sure. I take off my seatbelt, and he gave me a ticket for not wearing my seatbelt.
Yep.
What a dick.
Yeah. That's
he's like, you have to wear your seatbelt in the car. I was like, what? He's like, well, your engine's still on, so you have to wear your seatbelt. And I was like, I can't fucking believe this is happening. So those are my two cop stories. Well, my observation and my story.
And there are myriad stories. Oh, God. Anyway, we could just keep going about awful stories personally and that we know. But I'm going to rein it in for myself because I'm getting
I'm just going to say one more thing about you two. And you clearly, I was a little more forgiving of this documentary than both of you. But I think Megan, you made this point, and I agree with you that this is just a little bit. It gives a little. It's too. It has an opinion, but it doesn't express itself. It doesn't express it strongly enough. So
right.
So
right.
Some numbnuts who's watching this, who is like, you know, back the blue, is going to be like, oh, this is totally a pro police document. You know, it's just one of those things. So
right. And, you know, yeah. Part of me and I've seen this criticism before in films, like, for example, Zero Dark Thirty is a prime example of that it's way too subtle in its depiction of, as far as torture goes. Like, it's not denouncing it enough, and people think it's pro-torture. Other people do not think it is. And, you know, and you can make, we're not making that argument here, but you can make the argument like, oh, no, it's just presenting the facts and that's good enough. But yeah, I'm like, no, I don't think it is good enough. But yeah, so I agree with myself and I agree with you, Dave, and with you, Evan.
It's good that you agree with yourself, truly.
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, and on top of all the racism, I mean, let's throw in the like weird anti-Semitism and
oh my God,
misogyny
yes.
from the cops, or, you know, like calling the commissioner a quote unquote panty waste and like
oh my God.
Describing, you know, Dr. Schlossberg as the quote consummate Jew. Like, there's just
oh, I
some
forgot about
really
that.
Gross stuff that's said in here. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
Just so much stuff. It's so hard to watch this. And like, yeah, you mm-hmm. present some of it, but you really need to have a sharper point of view to like you've both said. Otherwise, people are going to watch this and I think take away the wrong message.
Right. Right. Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that the most telling thing is, this is the last thing I'll say, is the two ex-cons who are being interviewed are the calmest. Mm-hmm. Most well-spoken,
kindest,
and just seem like gentle dudes. And then you've got these three or four, not including Harvey Schlossberg, who's in a different category, these three or four cops who are just angry, so angry.
Yeah.
And it's like, fuck, man, just go live on a boat. I mean, I don't fucking know. Jesus.
I wonder if that would solve a lot of the problems.
If they were in the middle of the sea alone,
misogyny.
Yes.
Yeah. These white dudes would just go off in a boat alone. I wonder.
Anyway.
You might have solved all of our problems.
I may
too.
Have. I may have. Yeah.
All right. Let's move on.
Please.
Let's move on to our final film of the evening, Emergency. Directed by Kerry Williams, written by K.D. Davila, or Davila, my apologies. This premiered at Sundance of this year. It stars R.J. Kyler, Donald Elise Watkins, Sebastian Chacon, and Sabrina Carpenter. And let me give you the IMDb summary. Ready for a night of legendary partying, three college students must weigh the pros and cons of calling the police when faced with an unexpected situation. Well, isn't that an interesting lead-in?
Yeah, I was going to say it's quite the transition because, you know,
yes.
police
yeah.
presence in this movie is a specter that hangs over it.
It's not without
Boy,
reason.
Boy, does it ever. No, not without reason. So yeah, I mean, that's a pretty good summary. I mean, it's a short and sweet one, but that's pretty much what happens.
Mm-hmm.
That our protagonists are Sean and Kumle, and they're both black college students, and they're about to graduate, and they're best friends, and they want to do this legendary party tour, and they want to be the first black students to do this, where you go to like every single frat party or college party that's happening. There's like seven parties or however many there are, and they're going to do that, and they're ready to start. But Kumle's bacteria that he's studying for his major, and it's going to be like his thesis, he forgets to lock the refrigerator, and if the door is open, which we do see it does pop open, it will kill his bacteria and it will kill his experiment and observations and all of his thesis. So he wants to go back. And when he goes back, and their roommate is also there, Carlos, they find a passed out drunk girl, a white girl. And they debate whether or not to call the cops because Sean is saying, well, you know, this is a white girl. She's unconscious. We're three brown guys. They're going to arrest us or shoot or, you know, do who knows what. And it's going to be awful. But Kumle is like, no. We have to call 911. We have to call the police. We have to take care of her. And it sets off this kind of wild night where they're trying to take her to the hospital. They're trying to do the right thing and they keep getting thwarted. So that's basically it. And we can get into more details as we go along. But what did you guys think?
Evan, why don't you start this one? I did the last one, right? So
yeah, I really dug this movie. I think it has a really compelling story. I think it's well told. I think the three lead performances are really, really good. It does this, I think, great balancing act of being kind of a, you know, this dark comedy where there's humor and levity to some of the proceedings as they're kind of running around trying to figure out what to do, how to get to the hospital, you know, to take this girl there, while her sister and her friends are out looking, you know, for her. We find out that this passed out girl was in high school and she's, you know, there with her older sister, and her older sister ditched her. And so they're kind of like trailing behind them for most of the movie. And then they link up. And of course, they think that these guys have the worst intentions. And so I think there's a lot of really compelling commentary on race in this film from the opening, you know, scene in class where you have the teacher. The British teacher who's leading a class scene and saying the N-word and talking about the N-word and like.
And saying it, as that, you said, and several times.
Flagrantly. Right,
and then, yeah, and then asking the two black students in the class what they think about it. Oof. And it's so there's a lot going on here, I think, to really sink your teeth into. And so I just thought this was really well done, like in terms of like weaving social commentary into a story that has moments of dark comedy, but also like, you know, just really poignant things to say about the police. And we don't even see the police until, you know, very late in the movie, but when they show up, boy, just those scenes pack a wall. And this ending haunted me.
I
can't stop thinking about this ending. It's haunting me. It's so well done. Anyway,
it's me just gushing about the movie.
Dave, what did you? Oh, sorry, Evan. Keep going.
Dug it.
Dave, what did you think?
Overall, I dug this a lot. I think this movie has some problems, though. And considering how hard I was on Hold Your Fire, you're going to be interested to hear what I have to say about this. First of all, I want to say that the three leads, RJ Kyler, Donald Watkins, and Sebastian Chacon, are excellent. In particular, yes, RJ Kyler and Donald Watkins, mostly because they have more screen time and more time to establish their characters. But Carlos is really great, too.
I love Carlos. And his
Carlos is just Carlos is the. It's kind of funny because, you know, you think that Sean, RJ Kyler, is going to be the comic relief, but Carlos is really the comic relief, as it turns out. So this is one of those things where it's like, I mean, both of the Kunle and Sean are both correct. You know, I mean, well, why shouldn't we call the cops? Well, because they might blow our heads off. I mean, two very.
Yeah.
Makes a lot of sense. Both of you make a lot of sense. But the way that the movie's made, when there's those couple of scenes where, first of all, the older sister is shitty. She's just kind of a shitty character. I mean, she's a shitty person, but she's also a shitty character because she exists only to be the you know, the racist fulcrum, you know? I mean,
right.
Which you need if you're going to tell this story, I think, and I don't know how I would do it differently or how anybody could do it differently, but it just seems like she's put in there to make everything worse, which is her function and it does work, or that's how it works. But also there are...
I know how you could have made it better.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. No, I was just going to say, I know. I was just going to say, I think if you fleshed out her character a tad more, sure. I think that it still would have worked, you know, like if we learned a little bit more about her, but that's it. But
yeah,
yes, but please continue.
She's more concerned with saving her own ass. I mean, she's concerned about her sister in an existential way, but she's also concerned that she's going to get in very serious trouble for bringing an underage kid to a college party. which makes her just a douchebag. But, we all did dumb shit in college and in high school, but I don't know a lot of people who brought their, you know, junior and in high school siblings to college parties. I can't think of one off the top of my head, you know? I'm sure it happens, but anyway.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think I knew people who did, had a sibling that was a year or two younger that brought to parties, but like, you know, they were in situations where they were
right.
They weren't
this young woman ditches her sister. Yeah. The other thing is there are a couple of shots in the movie where from her vantage point, it really does look like Kunle and Carlos and Ryan are doing shady shit. And
absolutely.
So in that way, she has a point. And so I don't know if it's, I don't know if that's intentional. I would assume that it is, but it gives her character a little bit more leeway than I think it deserves.
I agree with you.
I think it's important to show those scenes, though.
I think you're right.
I think there are a lot of layers to this. Like, there's the racial angle of her seeing, you know, her sister with, you know, two black men and and a brown kid. And like, so there's that, but then there's also just like the, you know, assumptions and it's three men, you know, like we know that men can't be trusted.
Well,
like,
that's true. This
is, like, but that's the problem. That's exactly the point. That's the problem, I think, too, is that, right, men are shady, men are rapey, men are gross, men are abusive.
You know, and even though these guys aren't that, we don't know them, you know, or these characters don't know them. They don't know anything about them. So they have to assume the
until
worst.
It turns out they do know them. Carlos's cousin is with these two women.
Exactly.
Which is a big coincidence, by the way.
Yeah.
A helpful one.
Well, for them, sure.
Right. Because then they can kind of get on the same page, even though there's still a really bad situation where the sister is, you know, dying and they're frantically trying to drive to the hospital. And then the cops are chasing them while, you know, Kunle is trying to perform CPR on the sister. Yeah.
And there also is the other character, the sister's. Is it Maddie? Which one is the older sister who's awake? Maddie, right? Anyway, whatever the sister is who's looking for her younger sister, her friend is more willing to believe Ryan and Kunle and Carlos than the sister, which I think is an important thing to mention because they're not all shitheads. Just the main one is a shithead.
Right.
Right. Yes. And Alice is the friend who wants to believe that.
Right.
Yes,
and then you've got Carlos's cousin, whose name I also don't remember, who is probably just helping these women out because he's hoping he can score with the one he's been.
Raphael.
Yeah.
Character's name.
Who he's been hanging out with. And I mean, thank God he had that. I don't know what it was. It was some kind of scooter or something that he was riding. But what is that thing called?
The skateboard with like the wheel.
Giant wheel.
I don't know what those are called. Yeah.
But also then, you know, they make the decision to try to outrun the cops to get to the hospital. And that's one of those things where, okay, you're panicking. I can see someone legitimately doing that and thinking if we outrun them and we get to the hospital, then everything, they'll see that we're trying to save this young woman's life. Yeah. But from a storytelling standpoint, there's just nowhere else that can go than where it ends up. So,
well, it could if the cops actually saw what was happening and used some intuition. Oh, these people stopped
but cops aren't
right
gonna do
in
that.
Front of the emergency room.
Cops aren't going to do that.
No.
So,
well, I know, because they suck.
Right. That's my point. And I think that's the filmmaker's point. It's just like, these young men are in a no-win situation. So by the way, it's really ballsy to try to turn a subject like this into a comedy. I mean, wow. Because there are some genuinely laugh out loud, funny moments in this movie.
Yes.
Absolutely. All based around the three guys.
Yes. They're all very funny.
And I was really, I don't really expect a lot from, let's put them in air quotes, comedies that take place at colleges. But I mean, the acting of the three leads, like I said, the three of them are phenomenal. They're just so good. So I think a lot of those performances carry some of the more like aspects of the script for me. That's all. That's where I come down. I liked it overall. I would definitely recommend it. So, Megan.
Well, thank you. I am actually, I agree with both of you. I might be somewhere in the middle, maybe closer to you, Dave, maybe not. Because yeah, I definitely love the three lead performances, like both of you. I think those three lead performances, the film wouldn't work without their camaraderie and mm-hmm. those emotional performances. And, you know, I do agree with you, Dave. There's some issues with the writing narratively, but some of the dialogue is, I think, really well done.
Oh, yeah.
Like the conversations that Sean and Kumle are having about race are incredibly well done, because Sean has had very different experiences where he's had family members shot by police and he's been called the N-word. And Kumle says, no, I've never been called the N-word except online, but never to my face. And he is leading a different existence and a different life. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Sean often calls him an Oreo because he's black on the outside, white on the inside, which is clearly offensive to Kumle. But yeah, but so their conversations are really good. And I think their rapport is really great. I think this has such a strong opening. That scene with the teacher is horrifying.
Oh, my God.
So well
done. So uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
So uncomfortable. And I think the ending is really fantastic, too. And I want to talk about that in just a second. I think what doesn't work for me is the middle. I think it kind of doesn't really go anywhere. And I think you're right, Dave, that it's kind of written like it, there's only one way for it to go, which is kind of fine in a way, because there's an inevitability to it. You know it's happening, yeah. You know it's coming, and you dread it. But also, I wish there had kind of been a little bit more. So for me, the beginning is really strong, the ending is really strong, and I wish the middle had been a little bit stronger. But performances are great. It is really funny, and I don't always laugh out loud in comedies, and I definitely did here, especially RJ Kyler and guy who plays Carlos. Really, both of them are really fantastic comedically. I like at the end when Maddie, the older sister, is reading her apology to Kumle.
Oh, yeah.
And she is centering herself, that she's working on herself. And he very quietly and slowly closes the door because he doesn't want to hear her bullshit. And I love that. Mm-hmm. I think that's very telling. I think it was incredibly well done, because it could have gone to a really schmaltzy territory where he has this whole speech, you know, telling her off. And I just think that doing it wordlessly like that was just perfect. I think it just, it spoke volumes. And then
she's not deterred,
the
though.
Final.
She's going to leave it in the mailbox. What? Remember?
I know. She's like, I'm going to leave it in the mailbox. I know. That is funny. The final shot of Kumle's face after he's laughing, playing Jenga, having a great time with his friends, mm-hmm. of his tense, scared face because he hears police sirens, mm-hmm. is so haunting and so disturbing. And I think that is also exceptionally well done, because you see Sean looking at him, because Sean knows exactly why he mm-hmm. is frozen. And he clearly will have this trauma for the rest of his life, and it will just reverberate. And it's so sad. And I keep thinking about Kumle being arrested on the ground, and he's like shoved on the ground with gun on his head. And he's yeah. like, I was just trying to help. I was just trying to help. And he's just saying that over and over and over like a mantra. And it's just terrifying, because here he was like trying to save this girl's life. And because he's black, he's immediately assumed to be, you know, the villain there. And it's just,
right.
it's gutting. It's so gutting. And I think this film does that exceptionally well.
I was just like, I knew where it was going, so I was just kind of bummed out. You know,
like, he's there inside the minivan, the door is open behind him, he's still trying to perform CPR on the girl, and then the cop is right behind him pointing a gun at his head and drags him out. And like, it's really a miracle that this girl survives, because the cops waste so much time,
yeah.
you know, throwing them on the ground and,
right?
and, you know, roughing them up and not showing any sense of urgency to get her to the paramedics, that it's a miracle that she survived. And it's just like, it's just so emblematic of the police. They're just so focused on like getting the quote unquote bad guy without even really realizing the most important
yeah.
thing in the
and
scenario.
At that point, yeah. even Madison and or Maddie and Alice are screaming, no, they're trying to help. They're,
yes.
My sister is the one who needs help. They're trying to help her. She needs a doctor or
right.
whatever. They're clearly like,
right. And they're just not even listening.
Nope. Nope, because I didn't give a shit.
But that is a hell of a scene. And then the follow-up to that when they make it back to the lab and Kunle is checking on his samples to make sure they're okay because Sean has gone back and he's slept in front of the fridge to keep it closed.
Yeah.
So sweet.
And they have this like really emotional conversation where they both just kind of bare their souls about, you know, Kunle tells him about what happened and how, you know, it traumatized him and, you know, saying like, no, you were totally right before, you know, like it should have known this was going to happen. I should have listened to you. And then, you know, so Sean is like, no, like you tried your best. You did your thing. And like, you know, they talk about their friendship and it's just, it's a really incredible scene to see these characters all be so vulnerable with each other and like, you know, end up, you know, sobbing in each other's arms basically. And it's just,
yeah.
I just thought that was all so well acted and so well done. And then to, you know, like we said, see the ending where, you know, Kunle is hearing the sirens and seeing his face just change. Oh my God. Oof. Hit me like a ton of bricks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have to credit better parenting that Gen Xers do than baby boomers did for the two of them to be able to have such an open, honest, heartfelt conversation and not worry about somebody calling them a name. Because, you know, as someone who was raised in the 70s and 80s, you didn't have conversations like that with people. Jesus Christ. Unless you get your ass kicked.
Yikes.
Well, you know how shitty kids, I mean, I'm sure kids are still shitty, but you know how shitty kids were like when we were growing up. Jesus.
Yes, I do. Very homophobic. Yeah. Right. You showed vulnerability or emotions.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. You're just making me think of the scene where, you know, Carlos is saying we shouldn't call each other pussies.
Yeah.
You know,
like,
I love that.
We shouldn't use language like
yes.
that.
Yes. He's you know, like, it's misogynist.
Pussies are strong.
Yeah. They are strong. They give birth. Thank you. He's like, actually, we should be talking about wieners. We should call each other wieners.
Yeah,
or
cowards.
It. It was great.
Or coward yes. wieners or whatever yes. it is that they start calling each other.
And then I think one of them says bitch or something. And he's like, oh, and Carlos is like, oh, no, that's bad, too. And I'm like, yes, Carlos is the hero of this film. Thank you, Carlos.
Mm-hmm.
It was great.
He was there with his fanny pack and his granola bar, which I love that Sean eventually accepts that granola bar because he's hungry, even though he keeps saying, I swear to God, if he offers me his granola bar one more time.
I love that Carlos loves the solar system and wears solar system clothing, has a fanny pack, and has granola bars in it. I think it's great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting thinking about the writing. And I know we were, Dave, you and I were kind of talking about the narrative issues. But at the same time, I think the writing is really sharply done in the dialogue. And I think it's also really well done in the character development and the way the characters are written. So, yeah. So I actually really, I like the writing more. Yeah. As we're talking about it, I'm realizing how much I like the writing and the acting. And yeah, anyway, this was good. I enjoyed this a lot. Well, I don't know if enjoyed is the right word because it's also really difficult to watch, but it also is enjoyable too.
It is. It's a really deft balance of dark comedy and social commentary. It really, like you said before, Megan, like great ending, great beginning. You know, it's just like, you may have some issues with the middle, but you can agree that like start and finish, it just starts and ends on very compelling notes.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. All right. Do we have any final thoughts?
I do not.
Evan?
No, I think that's it.
All right. Well, let's do a recap. Firestarter is now streaming on Peacock, and it's also playing in theaters now. Evan, would you recommend this film?
Yes, but I would say you should be seeing it on Peacock and don't waste your time or money getting to the theater to see it. It is fine on the small screen.
And I would say do not waste your time at all. Even watching it on Peacock, this is just a hard pass. Okay, Hold Your Fire. It is in theaters and available to rent VOD now. What would you guys say?
I don't know. Maybe. But your mileage may vary.
Ooh, yeah. I agree with that. Because I think there are better documentaries that look at racism and white supremacy. But I think there are some good things here. So, yeah, I'm leaning more towards pass. But if you watch it, yeah, your mileage may vary. I agree with that.
I'm in the hold on to your money camp.
Fair place
that,
to be.
I like that camp. And Emergency is in theaters now, and it will be streaming on Amazon Prime Video on May 27th. And I think it's safe to say we would all recommend it. Is that right?
Yes.
Enthusiastically. Yes.
All right. We all recommend it. I love it. I love when we agree. Actually, I love when we disagree too. It's fun.
I don't even think your mileage will vary. I think it's just like, yeah, it's a yes. It's a solid yes.
Yeah. It's just a good film. Yeah. There's a lot there. A lot to unpack. A lot to enjoy. Agreed. So we want to give a huge thank you to our editor, Otto Klammer. Otto, you are awesome. Thank you for everything you do week in and week out for us.
Thank you, Otto.
Thanks, Otto.
You can find us anywhere you get podcasts. We are all over the place. We are also at spoilerpiece.com. You can find us all over social media. We're at SpoilerPiece on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, and TikTok. So come follow us on all of the social media platforms. Come say hello. We love hearing from you. Speaking of the fact that we love hearing from you, feel free to email us, spoilerpiece@gmail.com, or you can call us
at 862-21-PIECE.
Call us. Leave us a voicemail message. Text us. Tell us, no, Firestarter is amazing. Evan is 100% correct. Or, no, Megan, you're right. No.
Scorched earth policy.
Yes. Tell us what you think of Emergency. Did you also enjoy it as much as we did? We want to hear from you. We want to know what films you're watching, what films you enjoy. What are your thoughts? If you like the show, which we hope you do, please consider rating and reviewing us by going to ratethispodcast.com/spoilerpiece. That will take you to your preferred platform of choice. You can also rate us directly on Apple Podcasts. That helps us out tremendously. You can also rate us on Spotify. And if you really, really, really like the show and you're not a patron yet, consider joining our Patreon. For $5 a month, you get access to weekly bonus episodes, such as this week. We did our bonus episode on rom-com Pretty Woman, and we had a lively and robust conversation on it. It was always a lot of fun on our bonus episodes. And you also get to vote in monthly polls. Those are also always fun. We love hearing what you choose. And we're going to have a poll very, 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 very soon for you to vote in. So if you're a patron, thank you for being a patron. And if you're not, consider joining. My name is Megan Kearns. I write film reviews for Edge Media Network. I'm a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association. And you can find me on Twitter at OpinionSWorld or on Instagram and Letterboxd at TheOpinionS.
My name is Dave Riedel. I write and talk about movies. I'm on Instagram, Twitter, and Letterboxd as Dave Sees Movies. And there you have it.
And my name is Evan Crean. I'm co-chair of the Boston Online Film Critics Association and co-author of your 80s movie guide to better living. You can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd as Real Recon. And that's real as in film reel.
Thank you so much, everyone. We appreciate you listening, and we will see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.